Kabbalistic and halachic customs which have Kabbalistic origins. Finish up that segment, and if we have time, we could start something fresh, something new. But there's still a lot of really fun, fascinating halacha to discover about Kabbalistic halachic stuff. Sounds good? Awesome. Okay. So first off, I have to answer Kara's question about Havdalah. Is there a real source that however tall you raise the candle, then that is how high tall your husband will be? So what do you think? Survey says? No. Okay. So I have a proof that it's not true because my wife is like 5'1" and I'm like 5'11". So I don't think she could have reached that high. I'm 5'10". Maybe. I'm not sure how tall she is. So no, there is no halachic or any real source for the funny thing that we say that you should just stand. Oh, we'll get to mustache in a moment. But right, we actually talked about that the first year. We mentioned that year. I'll do it a minute. Right, I'll mention that again. Basically, no, it's just a joke that we say because it's funny. Now there is an idea that you start off shir, you start off a lesson with a joke. There's an idea. It's mentioned in the Gemara. It gets people into it. Okay, I'm not such a good joker, so I don't do it. But, you know, other rabbis who are funny, they say jokes, right? So maybe at the beginning of our week, the first thing that we do is we want to start off our week with a joke, with a smile. So that's why we say this silly thing that you can, whoever tall you read the Havdalah candle, that's how tall your husband will be. There's also nice drashas that your husband's like the fire in your life, in the Ish and the Isha, they create a fire. So you can come up with all sort of Hasidic drashas, but there's no actual real Jewish source for that cute thing that we do. Yeah.
Is there a sense for the minhag? I have a friend who's Sephardi, and at Havdalah, they like laugh into the
Kiddush Hatzos. Oh, so that maybe that's related. That is a real thing. It's a real custom mentioned in real Jewish sources. So that's the idea that I've always heard, and I think it is true, but I'm not 100. I haven't seen it in Sephardim. Is we want to again start off our week with joy and salvation and things like that, but I don't know the exact makor. Maybe I can look into that for next week as to where that custom comes from. But I think it's a legit custom. I think that's what I've heard. And what was the other thing? Oh, in terms of if you drink the grape juice, will you grow a beard? So there have been studies. People have actually done it. No, they actually haven't been any real studies. But as far as I know, that is also a halachic myth. So we already started our shiur 2 minutes in. We got 3 minutes. It's not a real thing. You won't grow a beard if you drink the grape juice or the wine of Havdalah. Oh, there is an idea that women should try to have a man be motzi her. We've talked about this before.
Yeah,
we said that because there's a machlokes exactly as to whether women are obligated in this time bound mitzvah called Havdalah. And at the end of the day, we actually said that if there's no men around, a woman should say Havdalah, even if there are no men around. If it's a tircha, if it's annoying to go find a man, you can say Havdalah, and the only way to do real Havdalah is to drink grape juice, and that's okay. But in general, since there's a preference for men to be motzi women in this particular instance, perhaps that's where this idea came from of women growing a beard if they drink the Havdalah. There's also other theories that there's some other Kabbalistic things that it got confused. All sorts of interesting theories. You could look on the internet out there as to why that custom developed, but what you don't have to remember that because it's not
true. Did you do the candle one with like the height?
Yes. Okay. It's a myth. Okay. That's it. Yeah. That's all you have to know. Good.
Are any of these myths true?
I think by definition,
no,
a myth is not true.
No, but
yeah.
And it ever happened before, like, come true, like,
it wouldn't be a myth anymore if it came true, as far as I understand. But I don't want to confuse you. There are legitimate, you just have to ask, you have to do the research. There are legitimate, real things. So, for example, you know the thing of putting your nail by the fire? You know, people put their nail to the fire. So, that's a real thing. That's a real segula. It's a real minhag mentioned.
No, but like the
that.
Yes.
But the toenail.
That's what I'm saying. You know, it looks also like a myth, but actually
no,
that has it has reasons and sources behind it.
Pregnant women. I don't know if you ever did this one.
Oh,
but
sure.
Is that a myth still?
That's a very good question. Oh, I will get to your question in 1 second.
I love that.
Okay, I know you were first. I'm not being
careful.
I think
it's like a superstition.
Okay.
Okay.
Everybody's questions will be answered. But I happen to know a little bit about that issue about cutting nails. That is mentioned in the Halachic Svarim, in the Mishnah Berurah. It's a real thing that you should not cut your nails and put them on the floor because it is meant to be dangerous. It is considered dangerous for pregnant women.
Flush it down the toilet.
Right. For that reason, the Gemara says that you should either burn it, would be the ideal way to do it, or just get rid of it. So the way we do it is we put it into the toilet, right? Or the garbage. The toilet's great. And I was actually in a car a few days back in a taxi cab, and the taxi was cutting his nails and throwing it out the window. It was really disgusting.
It's not nice.
It wasn't nice. It was
impressive.
So, anyways, it was not a pleasant experience. The point is, it's a real thing. Now, it is a Kabbalistic thing. Remember, we're talking about Kabbalistic halacha. That would be a perfect example of a mystical idea, seemingly, which has made its way into the halacha's heart. Some just say it's dangerous, but it doesn't seem like to make sense that it would be much more dangerous for a pregnant woman than a not pregnant woman. So there are mystical reasons behind that idea of not leaving your nails around. By the way, also, if you sweep it, then the powers of the nail have been lost. So even if you lost a nail, you can just sweep the house, and it's no longer dangerous. So that takes away. There is a lot of Hasidist on nails. Interesting enough. There's a lot of stuff about nails. We talked about this in our Shabbos course, how nails symbolize klipat noga, which is basically some of the nail is connected to your body, so it's alive, and like you touch it and you feel it, right? And some of the nail, the top of the nail, is dead. It's not connected to you anymore, right? So that's why the nail symbolizes in Hasidic thought the dividing point between what's alive and what's dead. That's why Erev Shabbos, it's considered a big avodah to cut your nails before Shabbos, to get rid of the dead parts of your life so that we can connect to Hashem, the essence of our life. So there is a lot of Hasidism and Kabbalah behind cutting nails. It's not just a random thing. And that's also part of the reason why we do look at our nails and look at the nails and the skin when beginning our week. The simple reason is just we're supposed to get benefit from the fire. So we do it with anything. So you don't have to do it with your nails. But the custom is to do it with your nails to begin our week by trying to tell the difference between the good and the bad in our lives. Okay? Yeah? Okay. Question.
For when you do like the this thing,
yeah.
Like whatever, my cousin told me that you're supposed to, like with your palms.
Yeah. That's also mentioned in Hasidic Sfarim, that there is such a concept.
Like what's...
I don't know. I don't remember the exact reasoning as to what behind that you're supposed to... Yeah, I don't know. I've seen it in the farm, but I don't remember the reasoning why. Yeah, question?
Yeah, I kind of still want to tell. Is it true that you're supposed to, like, be able to see the fire in your nails when you go like this?
Yes, the goal is to use the fire to see something.
But what if, like, let's say, like, in these big, like, shabbat home groups, like, we're all kind of far away from the Abdallah camera.
Right.
Sometimes you can't even see it.
Right. So this is, again, that's why it's good to know what's a halacha and what's just a nice thing. It's just a nice thing.
Uh-huh.
Okay, it's no big deal. Don't worry about it. Yeah, you're 100% yotze and not doing this or the other thing.
Mm-hmm.
Just a nice, Hasidic, Kabbalistic idea. Okay, but totally optional. Not a big deal if you don't do it. Okay? Awesome. Amazing. So we covered Havdalah and nails. Moving on. We wanted to mention a few more influences of Kabbalah on our lives. Okay? So have you guys heard of Nusach Sfard? Anyone here daven Nusach Sfard? I too daven Nusach Sfard. I actually am a convert. I originally was an Ashkenaz davener my whole 18 years, first 18 years of my life, and then
I found out my great grandfather davened it, and then my grandfather did, and stopped. So
that's exactly what happened to me too. So my grandparents on both sides were Hasidim, and they daven Nusach Sfard, and then my dad went to America, and everyone in America daven Ashkenaz and daven Nusach Ashkenaz. So when I came to Israel and Nusach Sfard, and I found out my grandparents are Hasidim, so I changed back to Nusach Sfard. So what exactly is the difference between Nusach Sfarad and Nusach Ashkenaz? Anybody?
There's different orders.
There's different orders, there's different words here and there. Why? What is the rationale behind the difference between Ashkenaz and Sfarad? Any of you guys learning about this? So it all...
Does it come from, like, different, like, Sfaradian, like, same thing?
So here it's a bit more complex. It's not... Okay, so there's Ashkenaz and would come from European places, and the Sfaradian would come from Spain and Turkey and all those areas.
It's, like, same thing with...
So you would think, but actually it's a little different. It's a little different. It goes like this. It all started with the Arizal. Like so many things, so many of our traditions started with Yitzchak Luria, Svat, and Rav Luria basically changed the Siddur. And Nusach Svart is basically the Hasidic version of an Ashkenazi Siddur. So it's basically Ashkenazi, but they take the Arizal into account. So anytime the Arizal, not anytime, but many times the Arizal said, well, change the word, because the Arizal had whole different ways of understanding the deep spiritual meanings behind every single word of tefillah. So they trusted the Arizal, and they said, we're going to go like the Arizal, and that's what Nusach Sfarad means. It's basically Ashkenaz, even though it sounds like Sfaradi, but it's really Ashkenaz, with some Arizal tweaks. Sfaradi also has many, many Arizal tweaks. It's very Arizal-oriented. And Ashkenazi didn't take the Arizal so much into account. Okay, so Ashkenazi was like the Gra, the Vilna Gaon, who was also a Kabbalist, interestingly enough, but didn't necessarily change everything for the Arizal to Minhagim. And that's why. That's sort of the differences between.
What's like the difference between like the Ashkenaz, Sfarad, or whatever, and then Edu Mizrach? Like,
what's the. Edu Mizrach means Sfaradi.
No, I know, but why?
So that one of the main differences between them is how big of an influence the Ari HaKadosh had upon him. So again, so basically Sfaradim were in a different, totally different place, and the they didn't have a set text originally, so it evolved to be differently, and they took a lot of the Arizal into account. Ashkenazis, it evolved in its own way. It's all rooted in the Gemara, but there was different evolutions, and they had lost track of the people. And Nusach Sfarad is basically Ashkenazi with some Arizal twists. So if your family is Hasidic, okay, which basically means you were influenced in a strong way by the Kabbalah, because Hasidus is a play on Kabbalah. It's a reinterpretation, retaking the Kabbalistic ideas and doing it in a whole new type of way, but it's basically very Kabbalistically oriented. So then you're probably originally were davening Nusach Sfarad. Okay, and that's why I changed my Nusach to Nusach Sfarad, because I am of Hasidic lineage and try my best to do stuff Hasidically when I feel like it, to the best of my ability. Okay, so that's a little tiny bit about Nusach Ashkenazi Sfarad and Hasidic. And not just for the Siddur, but the Siddur is a prime example of Kabbalah's influence on our day-to-day existence. Okay, a few more examples. Simchas Torah and Sukkis. Have you guys heard of the custom of Ushpizin?
Yes.
Yeah? You see the movie?
They're in our sukkah.
They're in your sukkah, right? Any guys see the movie?
Yeah.
You even saw the movie. Okay. So what's Ushpizin about? What do we do every day of Sukkis? We
welcome guests.
We welcome guests. And not just any guests. Who do we welcome?
Avo plus David, Moshe, Shlomo.
Right. Every day we welcome into our tents a different one of our ancient ancestors, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and their wives also, according to some. And we have a holy guest, and people sing this song, Ushpizin, and say the prayer on the walls. You guys, I assume, are familiar with what I'm talking about. Now, the truth is, the concept of having Ushpizin, Ushpizin is Aramaic for guest. The concept of having a guest at your house on Sukkot is not made up by the mystics. It's in the Torah. The Torah tells us that we have a mitzvah to invite the gerim and the outsiders into our tents. So I personally love having Shabbos guests and Sukkot guests, and Sukkot is my favorite time to host, because it's a mitzvah d'oraita to have orchim, to have guests in your house, and they bring the light. That's on a chumash level. But comes the Kabbalah, the Arizal, and says we have special holy guests who come into our sukkahs, and that's our avos, and they each symbolize a different energy, right? So Avram, for example, what energy does he symbolize according to the Kabbalah? You guys have learned this. Avram is chesed. Yitzchak is Gevura. Strength. Avram is kindness. Yaakov is Teferis, the harmony between them. So, whatever. It's not a Kabbalah seminar. Maybe we should do that one of these days. But basically, that whole idea, which I think a lot of us regular folk do, is all originated with the Arizal and the Kabbalah. Okay? Another idea that I think we're all familiar with is Hakafos. Right? One of the two times that we do Hakafos, we...
Simchas
Torah. Right? And Hoshana Rabbah. Actually, every day of Sukkot, we do Hakafah, and we do many, many Hakafos. Okay, we run around the shul seven times. When's the first time? Is a good trivia question. When's the first time when we see hakafos, not in halacha, but in the Torah? Five bonus points. Who does hakafos for the first time?
Is it when they dance around like the...
Rogelio. Oh, that's interesting. Maybe. I didn't think about that. That's true. In a bad way, they did hakafos. You can answer that. I was thinking Yehoshua. Remember when they run around Yericho in the first chapter, right in Sefer Yeshua, when they go around seven times around Jericho? Why do they do that? To siege them, to conquer it spiritually. And that Hakafa was in the Torah. Okay, it was actually a tour guide thing, but we think we may have found the spot where they first got into the land and did those Hakafos. So that began in the Torah, but then Kabbalistically, Arizal says that every Simchas Torah and Hoshana Rabbah, there's this idea of going around seven times and bringing the seven Sefirot, the seven energies of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the world. A lot of Kabbalah, but that whole concept comes from Arizal. And one other time at Bezrat Hashem, you guys will do Hakafos in your life, a very special moment of Hakafos. At your wedding, that's right. And that too, I believe, comes from the Kabbalah. You're going to go around your husband seven times. That's all mystical. In fact, many, many customs of the wedding and funerals and all life occasions also have been heavily impacted by the Kabbalistic ideas, Kabbalistic customs. Okay, so there are many, many customs that are Kabbalistic in the wedding, but that's one great example. Cool? Okay, amazing. Moving on. So... have you guys seen in the sitters sometimes before you do like Kiddush or before people do prayers, the L'shem Yichuds or the Hinni Mulchan Mezuman that some people do, these little extra prayers that are written in like small font in the sitter? So maybe you've seen it, maybe you haven't seen it, you'll notice it now. Those extra prayers are also based in the Kabbalah. They're mystical unifications. They're called Yichudim. And there were rabbis who didn't like it. They said, they're extra, you're adding stuff to our religion, and they didn't like the concept of the Yichudim, but they've become pretty mainstream, especially in Hasidic areas. There's one time when even regular Ashkenazi, having nothing to do with Kabbalah, people do the Hinini Muchan Mezuman. Anybody know what I'm talking about? Right by Sfira Ta'over, Ha'omer. You'll notice that if you go to Shul, everyone says Hinini Muchan Mezuman. They do the whole preparation before they do Sfira Ta'omer. And I always thought it was funny that everyone becomes a Kabbalist in Sfira Ta'omer. But I don't know why. I actually have a few theories as to why, but it's a whole different shir. Anyways, all those extra prayers that people say is based on the Kabbalah. Speaking of prayers, okay? So we all know that in an ideal world, we should come on time for davening. And we should say every word of Psukei Dezimra Bezrat Hashem. But we also know that sometimes we're short on time. Or we are late, right? Even us, tzaddikim. And especially guys sometimes have to catch up in a minyan. And you're in a rush. So we know that if you're running late for a minyan, you can skip stuff, right? You can skip Baruch Shamar, you can just go straight to Ashrei, and then do one halukah, right? We've discussed this before, that you're really in a rush. You can praise God a little less. And you can skip around to get there on time. But it's good, interesting to note that according to the Kabbalah, you should try your best not to skip anything. Right? The Kabbalah explains every word of tefillah to have a lot of significance. It's like you're purifying your soul with each word. You're building blocks of tefillah. And you don't want to miss a brick in that beautiful structure that we're building every single day. So the Kabbalah would say, even if you're going to end up I'm not sure. I'm not going to say. But maybe it's even more important to say every word of tefillah, Pesukei Dezimra, than it is to hit a minion. I'm not sure. But certainly you should try your best, do everything you can to say every word of tefillah. And that's why a lot of times you'll see Sfardim and good tzaddikim coming a little early to davening and saying Ketoret and saying all these extra prayers, all of that extra stuff. They want to make sure they get every word of tefillah in, including all the extra stuff like Pitum HaKetoret. Okay, so that's another big influence of the Kabbalah. Few more. What about, you guys are in Tzfat, right? Mm-hmm. And you guys notice people dressed all in white?
Yes.
Yeah, you saw that?
In kittels.
In kittels, the whole way down. Right? Actually, I saw that, interestingly, I was in Qatar. And Qatar is a country that we just opened relations with, and they all are Arabs, but they're dressed all in white also. Like they're in mystics in Tzfat. But anyways, in Tzfat, people dress all in white. Women and men, you'll find people like this. What's that about? Where did that come from? Any guesses? Where's the custom of dressing in white from? If we're in Tzfat.
To copy angels.
To be like angels, yafeh, beautiful. And to also to be like the Kohanim. The Kohanim had to dress all in white in their garments. But all of that is not based on halacha, but based in, you can guess if it's in Tzfat, in Kabbalah. Okay? It's based on the Arizal, who was very big into white. I don't know if he'd wear a black hat nowadays, because he wanted you to wear all white garments. He's very big into wearing white. So that's why you'll see sometimes people wearing 8 garments. How they get there, they have to be very creative. But they wear 8 white garments, just like the 8 garments of the Kohen Gadol. And that practice also is based on the Kabbalah. Okay, in fact, really Shabbos customs that are Kabbalistically oriented could be a whole shiur in itself. And Shabbos, the Kabbalah really takes over and has a huge influence on our halacha. Personally, I get into my Kabbalistic mode on Shabbos. The rest of the week, I'm a little bit of a chassid, a little bit of a Kabbalist, but on Shabbos, I feel really connected to the Kabbalah, as do many other Jews. So, you can do that too. You can become more Kabbalistically inclined on Shabbos. Okay, now I'm going to some stringencies, some chumras that Kabbalah has helped us get there. Or just added practices. So we mentioned this a few weeks ago, and I never got to finish it, so I want to just finish it. Music. Okay, listening to non-Jewish music. Is there a problem? Are you allowed to listen to non-Jewish music according to halacha?
What about a guy?
Okay, I'm not talking about a guy and a girl. That's a different shoe.
Yeah.
No, we have time, we can talk about that.
No, but that's just, how could he listen? That's a solid argument.
Right, so you're saying, well, if you're a guy and you're listening to girls, then that's an issue. But let's say you're a girl, or you're a guy listening to a guy. Okay, we'll leave Kolisha to the side, and if you're interested, we can talk all about it. I'm happy to talk about it. But my wife warned me that I shouldn't do that as a topic in itself until I get permission from you guys, because some girls might not want to hear about that from a guy. But we'll see if you guys are interested. We can also talk about that. But you're a guy, and you're listening to Stam Goy on the street. You're listening to Elton John. You're listening to, I say Billy Joel, but he's Jewish, so it's not a good thing. You're listening to, they're classic, so if it's classic, it's okay.
I'm saying, if you're gonna listen to like explicit rap, I would say that's not okay, because it's not like kadosh.
Right.
You're not supposed to
do
stuff like that.
Okay, good.
But, if we're talking Elton John.
So you're saying, if it's nice, it's okay, but if it's not so kosher rap, then maybe not. Okay, good. Any other suggestions, ideas? What? Yeah. Kedoshim to you. Okay, so maybe it's not holy.
Is that actual halacha or just like
what? Kedoshim to you?
Yeah.
So kedoshim to you is a halacha, but how you apply what is kadosh and what is not kadosh, maybe up.
Maybe it's not explicit, but the words are just like, it's not a nice song. Like, does that count?
Good, exactly. So that's exactly the discussion. Okay, so let me give you the short version. Again, the goal of the goal this year is to give you the basic end of the day what you have to know. I'm not going through the whole sugya with you, okay? Every shiur here, every topic we discuss can have a 45-minute shiur. I'm just giving you the little pointer so you can do your own research later. So it's like this. halachically, you can listen to non-Jewish music. There's no problem listening to non-Jewish music in general. This is all mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch and Mishnah Berurah. As long as A, it's not idolatrous. Okay? It's not used to worship other religions or other gods.
Can you listen to, like,
so,
Take Me to Church? Like,
exactly.
Oh.
So if... that's an interesting question. If the music is being used in a church to serve and is often sung in a church, then I would say it probably would be problematic to sing Amazing Grace or stuff like that. If it just happens to be something that Christians sing, like I think a lot of Exodus music is just nice, it was in the movies and people like singing it, but it's nothing particularly worshiping Jay about it. So it might come down to whether it's known. It might come down to whether it's known as a church song or not. Okay, so certain songs.
But like, Take Me to Church isn't a church song. It's just a song that has a lower church.
Sorry, I guess that's okay. I don't know. I'm not familiar, but these are gray issues. I'll tell you. I actually had a funny story. I had someone who was hosting a Shabbos meal at my house once, and he actually was Chozer B'Tshuva through Christian music. It's a whole story. Now he's a rabbi. So he was like leading a meal at my house, and he wanted to, like, out of a Hakarat HaTov, he sang this this Christian song. It wasn't like worshiping Jay. It was like one of these classic, you know, Christian songs, but it's a very Christian song. And he sang it at my Shabbos table. And the neighbors were not so happy, I have to say. They were not thrilled. So it's definitely not the best to sing anything that's associated with the church, first of all. Second of all, as you guys already mentioned, any music which, if you actually listen to the words, you would be a bit embarrassed or ashamed to say those words. It's also not just inappropriate, but halachically problematic to listen to music which has sexual content, which is, you know, makes people think things that they shouldn't be thinking, or inappropriate, unholy types of language, cursing a lot and stuff like that, would also not be appropriate, I would say, even halachically. And finally, I would say to use music that everyone knows is like secular and or originally associated with just a non-appropriate thing, and then to use it in a holy way also would not be appropriate. On the other hand, if you're singing a song which happens to be not Jewish, but you want to bring it into, you want to sing Hallelujah, right? Like everyone likes to do, even though I think he's Jewish, the guy who originally wrote it, and it's a little bit about a Jewish topic, but theoretically, you want to take one of these songs that people know is non-Jewish, but you want to bring it into your tefillah, technically, it's okay, because there's nothing inappropriate about that song, so as long as people don't associate it with something inappropriate, it's okay. But if we were to... by the way, what I'm telling you, many of these things are machlokeses, but I'm giving you the bottom line halacha, at least according to most posts. Okay, so you can do that. I'll tell you, Kuster, when I was a kid, I was the Amin Zemiros boy. So for the first, 8 years of my life, from 8 to 16, I sang every Amin Zemiros, Adonolah. We had all this whole, the last 20 minutes, I was a little kid in shul. And I got bored of it after a while, so I wanted to mix it up. So one Shabbos, the last song in Shul was Adon Olam. And I sang Adon Olam to a song, which I now realize is not really appropriate to be sung in Shul. And nobody really understood what song I was singing, but the entire Shul was silent. Not because they thought it was inappropriate, just because they couldn't pick up. And it was one of the most embarrassing moments of my life. But I think it was a champagne attack, because I did...
Wait, what was the song?
It was Tom Petty, I'm Free Falling.
Oh,
yeah. I don't know why I did it. It was like, I was in the mood to mix it up. But I learned to embrace being embarrassed. Anyways, that song probably wouldn't have been appropriate. Okay? So, basically, however, 90% of the songs that are out there, maybe 80%, 70, 60, 50, as long as it's kosher, you can listen to non-kosher music, non-Jewish music, according to halacha. But if it's not appropriate, It's not appropriate according to halacha. Okay? Sure, but give me a second. Let me just finish up. However, it's important to know that Kabbalists, in particular Rabbi Nachman Mibreslov, but not only Rabbi Nachman, many Kabbalists say, guys, stick with me. Stick with me. Got 15 minutes left. Let's do it. Okay? So, Kabbalists say that the who you're listening to is mashpia upon you. It has an effect upon you.
Yeah. That's also I learned that with unclean language, like cursing.
Exactly. So even if technically it's okay, if many people who are Hasidic or Kabbalistic or just spiritually sensitive, whatever, will try their best to hear holy music or it doesn't necessarily have to be Jewish, but from people who you get the vibe are kosher, transmitting good energy, music, and not shtuyot. So again, halachically, as long as it's appropriate, it's okay. But kabbalistically, it'd be better to be hearing holy music from Shlomo Katz and I don't know, all day. Okay, sounds good. Clear.
What about the Kol Isha?
Okay, Kol Isha. Kol Isha is a really interesting topic. I have an hour here on my computer about it. I'll give you the 5 minute summary. If you want, we can do a full day on it, but I'll give you the bottom line. Bottom line is huge machlokas, and there are different opinions across the spectrum. I'll try to fill you in. There are those who say that any listening to any woman singing is forbidden. Okay, you could call that the right wing, the Haredi stance, whatever. It's rooted in the Gemara. It's not made up. It's a real opinion in halacha, and that's why you'll have many people who, like, I don't know, even at a Shabbos table, the women will not say a thing. They will not raise their voice at all. And they're very, very strict to take that opinion. Then you have the opposite extreme. Okay, the opposite extreme is there are rabbis. Rabbi Lichtenstein wrote an article about this. Rav Lichtenstein's son. Rav Meir Lichtenstein, not Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. There's a Rosh Yeshiva at Gush. And the Rosh Yeshiva of Male Gilboa. Bigman wrote an article about this, and even Rav Riskin, I believe, wrote an article about this recently, that as long as the music is not sexually inappropriate, it would be okay to listen to a woman. A man would be okay. If there's something inappropriate about the way she's singing or about the way she's dancing, so then it or about the content, then everyone would agree that it's a Kol Isha issue. But if there's a girl singing Hatikva at a tekes or something like that, so those orthodox but really to the left-wing rabbis would actually amazingly permit one to listen to that.
So
especially if it was over the radio and it wasn't live. But hold on. Let me just finish.
So shouldn't go to like an Ariana Grande concert? Like that's...
I don't know. Thankfully, I'm the 70s was the last time I listened to music, so I don't know when any music is nowadays. However, guys, listen to the end of the sentence. The mainstream Orthodox world, the YU world, that I think most of us are closer to that world and what is most important for us, is the following. In general, men try to avoid listening, certainly to solos of women, in any context. Okay? That's, in general, the mainstream opinion. There will be exceptions made in particular circumstances. For example, some make an exception at a Shabbos table when people are singing Zmiros and everyone's singing. So I asked one of my rabbis, Rabbi Bednar, who's a Rosh Yeshiva at YU, if at my Shabbos table women are singing, do I have to leave the table or something? And he said, no, just sing louder. Because of the tshuva of the Sri Deish and others, that as long as it's for Avodas Hashem, nowadays, it doesn't arouse the same sexual thoughts, and as long as it's for Avodas Hashem and you're not focusing in and it's not causing any hirhurim, a man could listen, especially if there's three women at that table and they're singing Shabbos Miros. In that context, many rabbis or many people will be lenient, maybe not lechachila, but perhaps b'di'evan. Another situation which some are lenient about is listening over the radio. Rav Avadia Yosef talks about how if you're listening over the radio, it's not the same voice. Although the Rav Avadia says that once you know the picture of the woman, then it doesn't, that heter doesn't work anymore. So I used to, I try to be strict about that opinion. I try not to listen to women soloing, but if they don't, I've never heard her, then it's okay if it's on the radio. So I remember once I was going through my albums that my dad has, and I accidentally saw Stevie Nicks, who's like the head of Fleetwood Mac, and I'm like, shoot, now I can't listen to her anymore because I saw her face.
But
it's such a bummer. It's a band. But anyway, that's another, I'd say, pretty mainstream of it. And many people try to say, if you could recognize her, then it's problematic. But if you don't see her and it's on the radio and it's not live, then it's okay. You asked about a choir.
A Broadway
show and a choir. In general, the halacha is most rabbis, paskin, try not to. It's live and it's not for kiruv.
Is it for girls and boys or just girls? Oh, just boys.
Like it's for boys, but a girl has to ask himself if I'm going to be singing and boys are going to be listening to me.
No,
it is only for boys. I'm talking about it's only for boys, not for girls. The whole isser is only for men. With that said, even though the mainstream would not allow a guy to go to a Broadway show, there are rabbis who would allow it. Okay, there are Orthodox rabbis who. Your school choir. So I remember when I was young, I was more of a machmir than I am now. I didn't know as much as I knew now, so all I knew was a kitzur shulchan aruch, like the basic strict halacha. I went into my friend's graduation. I went into my cousin's graduation at a particular school. I heard them all singing. I think There Can Be Miracles or something, and I just walked out like in shock and disgust. Like, how could an Orthodox school like do a choir? So that is the opinion of many rabbis. But now I've learned that there are actually a lot of rabbis who would say that if there's more than three women, and if it's just a woman doing a solo, if it's a woman doing a solo, like I said, the mainstream, normal, mainstream Orthodox YU world sock would be to not listen, to not do that. But there are Orthodox rabbis, I've already mentioned their names, who have written tshuvas and said that as long as there's no sexual content, it would be permitted in that context. So it's a big machlokas. It's very complicated. It's very interesting. Apparently. How you define who's left wing and who's right wing is very subjective. I'm not giving you guys my opinion. I'm just telling you the spectrum. Some rabbis will hide from you views that they don't agree with. They'll say they won't say the left wing thing if they don't agree with it. I'm telling you everything, regardless of what is my personal opinion. These are some of the opinions in the Orthodox world about Kol Isha. And we can discuss, you know, like what it's about. But it's really more of an in-depth type of shiur. Well, I'm just giving you the basic halacha. Okay, cool. As for the Kabbalistic orientation of Kabbalistic, I have no idea. I've never studied what the Kabbalah has to say, but my guess is they would be strict. Because that's just my bad. Tov, a few more little things. We have till 8:20 eventually?
Yeah.
Okay, and I have to do attendance too. So maybe I'll squeeze one more. Right, we're going to do that, right? Okay, you guys on the test are on paper. That's amazing. Awesome. Okay, going to the mikvah, not for women. Women have to go to the mikvah when they get married every month. It doesn't matter, Kabbalah, Alafa. It's all the same. But for men, you know how some guys love jumping into the mikvah and some guys don't? What's that all about? Okay, so you're learning. One day you're going to go on a date with a guy. And he's going to say, I go to the mikveh every day, and you're going to have to decide if that's your type of guy or not your type of guy.
Guys? I was on the floor rolling reporter.
I don't know.
Like, did not hold back anything.
We're talking about your mikveh class?
No, we're learner, like, just was talking about that mikveh.
Oh, okay. I will not tell you that. I'm going to hold that. In any case, holy women. Come on, we got a strong cheer. Let's finish off strong. So, what's the deal with going to the mikvah? Okay? Do men have to go to the mikvah? What do you guys think?
Yeah.
No.
Yes? No? Maybe?
They should.
Okay. So, it's like this.
Where's the marker?
The Gemara says, originally, Ezra said that, Ezra made a decree that a man needs to go to the mikvah after an emission. Okay? That means after he was with his wife, for example. But that decree was rescinded because it was too hard for the Jewish people to take upon themselves, and people weren't learning Torah anymore. So that decree, while it was made, it was rescinded. However, those of the mystical path, and Hasidim in particular, have embraced the idea that it is still holier to go to the mikvah as often as you can. Either after an emission or just in general to prepare for prayer and especially to prepare for Shabbat.
Go to the mikvah every day.
So Hasidim go to the mikvah every day because Rabbi Nachman and many Hasidim, Baal Shem Tov, say that when you go to the mikvah, you purify your soul, your prayers come out better if you're a man.
And since Spartan, right?
Even I go to the mikvah every day. I go to the mikvah every morning.
What?
Yeah.
My cousin's girl built a mikvah in their backyard in Florida.
Yeah. It's not such a crazy thing.
Why?
You'd be surprised how many people are in the mikvah every morning.
Why? What's the explanation for that?
Because Hasidim go at Rabbi Nachman and...
No, but...
I'm a little bit of a Hasid, believe it or
not.
Oh, why? So again, it's a long cheer, but according to Hasidus, when you're going into a taval, you're being mevatel yourself, you're nullifying your ego, you're purifying your soul, and you're purifying yourself to prepare for prayer. Just like the Kohen had to go into the mikvah before he did all his holy service in the Beit Midrash. So to every Jew, the highest level is to go to the mikvah before you pray, and certainly before Shabbat. I go twice in the morning and in the afternoon. For Shabbat.
Twice a day?
On just an Arab Shabbat.
Oh.
But some people go. But again, all of this is the influence of Kabbalah, Hasidus, okay? So if you go out with a guy who loves to go to the mikvah, you know he's probably a Hasid, whether that's a run away from him or great, that's between you and you'll figure that out. But that's what's going on in terms of going to the mikvah and men, okay? 2 more minutes, because it came a little late. Chol of Yisrael, okay? Last topic for the day. Chol of Yisrael, okay? Should we be strict about only drinking Chol of Yisrael or not? What's that all about? So it starts like this. In the Gemara, it's a real din. It's a real halacha that you're only allowed to drink milk that has been supervised by a Jew. Okay? Why? Because in the Talmudic times, there was a fear, and it was a real fear, it happened a lot, that people would take milk from their cow and they would mix it in with a little bit of camel milk because they ran out of cows or something, and they had to fill it in, and no one would catch them. And people would do this. So camel milk is not kosher. Milk from a cow is. So in order to make sure that didn't happen, the din was, you have to be supervised by a Jew. Comes Rav Moshe Feinstein, the Gadol Hador in America in the 20th century, and he says something amazing. He says, nowadays, halachically, technically, you don't have to watch over the milk. You can have Chol of Nachri. Why is that?
The FDA watches it carefully.
Exactly, because the FDA makes sure that it's supervised very, very well. And there's no reason that anyone would want to put camel milk. And they check over these things, so there's almost no chance that anyone's actually cheating and putting camel milk or other non-kosher milk with your milk. Even though it hasn't actually been washed over by a Jew, it's like we have testimony that we know that this has been a kosher milk. Yeah? Question.
Okay.
And then I have to say the Kabbalistic perspective. Yeah.
Two questions. First, Rav Moshe Feinstein, is Ashkenazi or Sephardi?
Ashkenaz.
So
Sephardi can... I don't know if Sephardi necessarily followed this, but I think he was the Gadol Hador, so many Sephardi actually were lenient just like him also. But there might be another reason why Sephardi are more strict, and I'll get to that in a second.
Okay,
it's
only product produced from America because...
He was only talking about the product from America, but many have applied that logic to other countries where there's also... Where if in that other country, also they watch over the milk very well, and there's no chance of milk being, let's say some countries don't even have other types of animals. The only milk that produces cows, so, or just they watch over it very well, so there too, perhaps we would no longer need to watch over the milk halachically. However, Kabbalistically, once again, the Kabbalists say that, and in particular Chabad is strong about this, that there's a negative spiritual effect of drinking milk that was not washed over by a Jew. Somehow spiritually, just like listening to holy music, drinking milk that wasn't washed over by a Jew can have a negative effect upon you. There's lots of stories they tell about stuff like this. But the point is, those who have a bit more of a Hasidic, Kabbalistic orientation will probably say, whether it's halachically permitted or not, and that itself is a machlokes, we're not going to drink that. Luckily, here in Eretz Yisrael, almost all the milk is Chol Yisrael, because it's much easier to get Jews to produce milk. I try my best, but I'm not a 1,000,000% strict. But actually, recently, I've been trying to be better. And living in Israel, it's 95% done. And also, I don't drink milk much anyway. Basically, I'm pretty much a vegan, except I have coffee with milk. So, that for me personally. All right, so that sums up the amazing day. And if anybody has any particular topics that they want to learn about for next class, please put it in the chat. Otherwise, I think we're going to move on to brachos and halachic myth of brachos and fun stuff like that. Bezrat Hashem. Can't wait till next week. Sounds good. And if you haven't signed up the attendance, please do that. So I'll enter you in right now.
Thank you.
Have an amazing Shabbos.